You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
He got him! Astros win the American League West. The train keeps rolling for the Houston Astros. 5 out of 6 years, 5 straight full-season division titles. An incredible run.
Todd Callis on the call last night as the Astros, as he said, clinched the American League West title. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant with me as always. Sean Mapes behind the glass as always. We're happy to be here, and we are happy to begin what seems like another deep playoff run for the Astros. They beat the Rays 4-0. That did not only clinch the title, it clinched that first round bye for the ALDS. Guys, your reaction when watching last night, we're used to it, but it's still special.
You got good pitching out of Luis Garcia. You got, I thought, even more impressive work from the bullpen by Hunter Brown. And considering that's the first that we've seen him in that spot, I think a good place to use him on the road against a Tampa Bay team that has had some postseason success. And you see him strike out Randy Arozarena, who's, you know, one of the best players on the Rays, pretty damn good player. Really good way, I think, to clinch it. Not against some of these scrub teams you've been playing of late, the Angels, the A's.
That's
you did it
point.
Against a good team.
Yeah.
And I think it means a little bit more when you do it like that. And a scrappy victory for them. You know, they had the leadoff home run by Jose Altuve, but it took them a little bit of time to get things going. But Altuve gets an infield hit in the sixth. Jeremy Pena afterwards, he draws a walk. And then Yordan Alvarez legs out a double. He drives in one. And then Bregman has this broken bat bloop double to left field, drives the other two guys in. And you see all the doubles that he's been able to put together this year, too. So, nice one inning to put things together and to clinch this one. And I thought that Hunter Brown, too, with Christian Vasquez behind the plate, looked damn good. So, continue to give him bullpen opportunities. And hopefully, this is something he's going to feel very comfortable with when it's the postseason and they're going up against, theoretically, a Yankees team or a Seattle team.
We talk a lot about the vets, as we should. Altuve, Verlander, etc. But when you talk about rookies like Jeremy Pena or guys that are on in their first year with the Astros, Mancini, Hector Neris, who Julia Morales said was kind of leading the party train last night, it is special. Those guys are experiencing it for the first time. So it's not like these guys that it's the expectation. It's very special for them. Before they started their celebration, Dusty Baker asked the ace, Justin Verlander, to address the team and give a little speech. Here's Julia with Justin after.
Justin Verlander, and you kick things off this time around. The speech giver. What was the message to everybody?
Just not take it for granted. You know, Dusty asked me to say something. I wasn't expecting it, but, you know, just kind of spoke from my heart, and which is, you know, after being away for a couple years, and, you know, you just realize how special these moments are. You know, you never know when you're going to be here or be back or what's going to happen in your life that, you know, you look at Hector, who's been in the league for 8 years and never made the playoffs.
So we've had reports from some of the most reliable reporters in MLB that Justin Verlander didn't seem like he was a part of this team while he was injured. He was in Florida. He didn't show up to the games. Whether or not the Astros liked him, didn't like him, I don't know. I'm not on the team. But there were those reports from, again, reliable MLB reporters. So to have him give this speech and to have him seem more in sync with the team, here's my question for you, Paul Gallant. Is it out of the tenderness of his heart because he wants to be on the team, or is it a little goodbye tour?
Ooh. Well, look, they have options to replace him. I mean, you're not replacing Justin Verlander. It's really, I think, a matter of, hey, what does Jim Crane want? And is Jim Crane going to let James Click make that decision? I honestly do not know. I really don't. You obviously have some questions about what's next for both James Click and Dusty Baker after the season, as it is, too.
That's a great point.
So you're in a pretty interesting spot. I do think that there's a pretty good chance that this is it for Verlander. I'm not saying it's like 50% plus, but I would say it's 20 to 25 or so, especially when you just take a look at all of the arms that this team has. Are you going to be willing to continue to bet that Verlander continues it the way that he has been pitching of late? You know, to make the cross-sport comparison that we've heard him make before of who he wants to be, Tom Brady.
Yeah.
This has not been a very good start for Tom Brady with the Bucs. These first 2 weeks, I think it's the lowest passer rating that he has had since, I want to say, either his first or his second year in the league. I think his first, because he barely played in his first year. So things to keep in mind. I do wonder if Verlander would tip his hand at this point in time.
Yeah.
I think he's appreciating this moment. I think that we'll probably have a better vibe on him in the postseason, say they have an early exit or something like that, or after they win.
Maybe he'll put on the Boris hat like Garrett
Cole. Oh, I hope not.
According
that would be
to Brian
awful.
McTaggart, the Astros' magic number to clinch the top seed is 7 over the Yankees. All right, we turn our attention to Monday Night Football. There was a doubleheader last night. One game was on ABC, one was on ESPN. It was very confusing.
Yes.
But the Bills did stomp the Titans 41-7. Derrick Henry shut down his worst game in a couple of years. It was not good, but the Bills, look, there's a reason they were they are the Super Bowl favorites by so many.
Yeah, God. I mean, you can talk yourself into the idea of them as an undefeated team, and I know a lot of people thought this was clearly the best team in the NFL going into the year. Turns out they were right, at least through 2 weeks. They have beaten the defending Super Bowl champions and last year's one seed by a combined 55 points.
Great point.
And while you got questions about both the Rams, I think, and Titans through 2 weeks, because they're not what they were last year, they're still competent teams. They're not bozos by any means. You know, they're coached by Sean McVay, who I'm not the biggest fan of. I think he's a little overrated, but I still think he's a good coach. Mike Vrabel, good coach. They kicked their ass. And most surprising, and this could be more a reflection of Derrick Henry, but, I mean, Buffalo's biggest problem last year was that they could not stop the run. It's not like that was usually an issue for them, seeing as they never punt.
Sure.
They score and they score and they score and they score. But they held Derrick Henry to less than 20 yards rushing on 10-plus carries. I think it was 11 for 15.
I mean, it's like Ryan Tannehill is nothing without him, which
no.
We have said from the beginning.
Right. Neither of us are surprised by it.
Right.
And I think most people aren't that surprised by
That's
it with
true.
Ryan Tannehill.
I think people have caught on to the hype. I will say, I thought Mike Vrabel was a little bit of a better coach than to be. They weren't quite blown out, but almost blown out this way.
They hung around for a while. It just, all of a sudden, like, boom, it just escalated so quickly in the third quarter. And the Josh Allen to Stephon Diggs combination is, I think, the best in the NFL right now. Obviously, Tyreek Hill's no longer with Mahomes. They could not be stopped in that game. And with the way that Allen can extend plays, there's a third and long situation where Allen rolls to his left, and you're like, is he going to throw it? You feel pretty good about him. And he just runs down the field, and he completely hurdled a defensive back who was going low to tackle him, and he gets the first down. And just think about that side of Josh Allen's game. And then, of course, that Diggs is a damn good route runner and just about everything that you want out of a wide receiver. He's good at it. Yeah. They have a very tough schedule coming up over the next, like, 5 games. They're playing 4 good teams. But if they get through that stretch, I don't know. I'm looking for a way, BUSR.com/ESPN, to gamble on the Bills going undefeated.
All right. The Eagles also defeated the Vikings last night. Kirk Cousins did not look good, and at one point threw a pass pretty much directly to Darius Slay. Here's what that sounded like.
Blitz. Cousins to the end zone, and intercepted. What a night for Darius Slay.
He gave that interception ball to James Harden, by the way.
Yeah. He did have 2 interceptions, though, and that's one of the best performances.
He looked good, Monday Night Football with Joe Buck and Troy just hits different, man.
You know what? You're right.
It just does.
Did you see on ESPN2, not ESPN2, but on ESPN after the game, you had Scott Van Pelt interviewing Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, and I was just like, I mean, that's like the holy grail.
Incredible.
Of all of those broadcasters in like the same setting.
Well,
together.
You have Lisa Salters on the sideline who's been doing it for like 25 years. It's just a very clean broadcast.
The Salters is interesting. So I have to go back and look at this. But there's a point where she's interviewing Jalen Hurts after the game. And Jalen Hurts like apologized because he was distracted by someone that came over. And I'm 70% certain that Lisa said, it's okay, babe, and like continue the question.
She is currently with Indiana basketball legend Stephanie White, so I do not think that her...
She said babe.
Babe to Jalen.
She definitely said babe.
Meant...
Are you picking up
what I'm putting down?
I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying, 100%. That was a very polite way of describing perhaps her interest.
Which I love, Stephanie. I mean, Stephanie, former Indiana Fever head coach, Purdue basketball legend.
Maybe that's just a common saying. I know that my football coach in high school...
Tom Brady calls everyone babe.
Well, and do you remember
said that a babe to us, my high school football coach?
Do you remember when people got on Jimmy Garoppolo because he looked at Aaron Andrews and went, feels great, baby. And it was like a whole thing.
Canceled. Yeah.
Also, Richard Sherman got in trouble for yelling next to Aaron Andrews.
Toxic masculinity.
How are you supposed to talk to Aaron Andrews? He can't be mean. He can't be nice. What do you do?
I don't know. I like that you tried to do that with Lisa Salters.
I didn't try to do anything. All I said is she said, I'm not implying anything. She said,
so what point are you making?
Right. So why did you mention it?
Because it happened. It made me laugh.
What else happened?
That's it.
Okay. What else happened that made you laugh?
You brought up Lisa Salters. It's a memory from last night that came to mind.
She's a great broadcaster.
And she says babe on the broadcast. I like it.
I'm a Lisa Salters.
Bring babe back.
Come on, Vanessa.
Bring back Toots.
We got our college six pack. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame you, Don.
In 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to alleviate the effects of the...
Time to put down the books and crack open a college football six-pack.
We're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
With Vanessa and Gallant.
Let's do it.
Is our college six pack where we take you through any of the college storylines of notice, particularly those in our geographical area. We start with Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies. They're coming off a win in Miami with Miami, and they were on the bench this morning. Here's Jimbo Fisher talking about this upcoming matchup.
Arkansas has got a very veteran offensive line. They got 4 of the 5 guys back. We know Sam's always been a great line coach. KJ Jefferson makes it go. He's strong, he's athletic. Getting him on the ground, not just throw him, his running, his legs, everything that goes on with him. They got a group of transfer receivers. Like I say, they've thrived. They've got about 9, 10, 11 guys that are making significant playing time for them that are total transfers. You know, you can regroup your team now. You got two choices. Do you recruit high school kids or do you go to the transfer portal? Go free agency every year. And they've gotten those guys in terms of receivers in, secondary guys in, bringing those guys in the secondary. Defensively, they're two linebackers. Drew Sanders, their top player on defense. He and Bumper Fool. Drew Sanders was at Alabama last year, and playing significant time.
It's a great point. I mean, I like that he brought up that it's basically free agency now. But yeah, how do you feel about the Aggs against Arkansas?
First off, Arkansas has been scrappy the last couple of years, and obviously you saw it last season where I think they swept both Texas teams, the most important ones. Sorry for all the other people that are out there, and this game's always drunk. I don't know how many of y'all have, you know, been up there to Jerry World for these games when they take place, but I've seen so many fun ones between the two. A&M is favored by 2.5. I definitely think they took a step in the right direction moving on from Haynes King. Anyone?
You were not a Haynes King fan from the get-go. Correct. I'll give you that.
I would have taken anyone under center instead of Haynes King. I wonder about this one, though. Arkansas is off to a damn good start, and I feel like there is a much bigger chance for Arkansas to put up a lot of points than there is for A&M. Like, A&M can only win this game, essentially, the way that they beat Miami, where it's just one of those, like, sloggy, ugly-ass games. So I'm not feeling great about the Aggies' chances going into this game.
Nebraska also obviously fired Scott Frost last Saturday, and that's what leads us to our next story. Urban Meyer, who is now a commentator with Fox after what can only be described as a disastrous year in Jacksonville, has been reported that he could be interested in the Nebraska coaching candidacy. CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd wrote on Saturday that the Huskers contacted Meyer while continuing to determine candidates. Pete Thamel argued with that, said Meyer and Nebraska had no contact. Either way, what would you think about Urban Meyer getting back into college coaching?
Well, much like when everyone made a big deal about LeBron complimenting Oklahoma City Thunder general manager Sam Presti, Meyer saying this, I've been telling you guys all week about Lincoln, Nebraska. This is the most unique place in college football. The fan base is unbelievable. Regardless of the score, regardless of their record, they're here. One time I came and got in a golf cart and drove around just to see the fan base. He is 100% kissing that ass.
It reminds me in Indianapolis.
Paving the way.
There was a news reporter who started writing a lot of positive stories about a certain school district. and then about 6 months later took up over as director of communications for that school district. Much smaller scale, but sometimes he can see the writing on the wall.
I don't think he'd be any worse than what Nebraska could possibly
do. He'd be better than Scott Frost.
And Scott Frost is the homegrown talent. Things were really bad for him at Jacksonville. I thought he would succeed in Jacksonville because he succeeded everywhere. And maybe he's not as into it as he once was. But, I mean, if you're in the Big Ten, would you not want to have the best coach in the Big Ten from the last couple of decades?
Yeah, I mean, it's logical if they can fight off the bad PR.
The PR at this point, too. I mean, you're Nebraska. You don't matter anymore. Do something. I should not endorse this move, but I don't think Nebraska can do a whole lot better than Urban Meyer when it comes to potentially turning their program back into what it used to be. So, I'd endorse it.
Weird controversy in South Carolina. When I tell you my reaction when I saw it, I don't even think I can say it on the radio. In an attempt to pay tribute to the anniversary of Title IX, South Carolina football paraded female students on the field. They brought them on the field, they cheered for them, and then they were screamed and kicked off the field. You got to see the video. It's very interesting, to say the least.
Shane Beamer is the head coach of South Carolina. And in his defense, Beamer, one, has actually stood up for women's athletics at South Carolina often. And two, I'm sure he had no idea what was going on in that situation.
No clue.
So I think to like say like, oh, he hates women or something like that, that's not accurate. That's not what actually took place there.
It isn't, but they should have some communication. And it's not Beamer's fault.
I think it's
but
more the AD department.
The athletics department needs to communicate with him. Hey, we know you have a million things going on, but you're going to see a bunch of random female athletes on the field when you come out. It's this X, Y, and Z because it did not make him look good.
At least Herm
Edwards
to where it
was fired. We don't know what the timeline of this was, but it's written down. Herm Edwards fired was he fired while walking off the field.
Yeah, the Arizona State athletic director and president, people are thinking that like there was this conversation that they had a video of as they were walking off the field. And Herm Edwards, who has been relieved of his duties at Arizona State, it does look like he had been absolutely bleep canned in that moment.
I thought Frank Reich would get fired walking off the field. It's happened before. These things can happen. I'd be interested to see that video. All right, Oklahoma State will end after Oklahoma goes to the SEC. Shout out to my girl Bailey, who played soccer at Oklahoma State. This is a big rivalry. It's a bummer that this is stopping.
Fun games. Bedlam always is. I know that one of our regular listeners, Warren, always says that Texas and Texas A&M isn't actually a rivalry. Well, I disagree with that. But it's definitely not Texas's number one. Oklahoma is. I imagine that this is a similar situation for Oklahoma where they're like, yeah, Texas is our arch rival. We're okay moving on from little brother. But it sucks because Oklahoma State's been a damn good program over the last decade and they're getting left behind. And all these local rivalries slowly evaporating in front of us is making college football a worse product.
It is. And I wish that there was a way where we could compromise. Okay, if you guys want to make more money, if y'all want to do this, etc., fine, but save a couple of games for those in-state rivalries.
These SEC schools don't want the possibility of losing because they feel like it's going to potentially keep them out of the college football playoff or something. And a team like Oklahoma or Texas, if they're in the SEC West or however the SEC is eventually divvied up, I mean, they're going to lose more games than they're used to losing. So I get it from their perspective, but I mean, isn't the point of watching college sports with friends to have the ability to talk trash to a friend for a full calendar year because of local ties?
You'd hope so. All right, we want to play you this moment. You've heard by now that we are not fans of the midnight yell tradition at Texas A&M. We had another video sent to us. Here's the midnight yell.
Was taking his son, Little Rocky, on a college visit to the greatest university in the world. Texas A&M! And when they got here, they joined a tour. But on this tour was a worthless, good for nothing, hanky panky.
What?
University of Miami Hurricane. And throughout the entire tour, that hurricane kept talking about the good old Sunshine State.
Hurricanes talk?
And even though he was annoyed at first, O-Rock managed to keep his cool. But after about 24 minutes of that Miami Hurricane trying to say how much better the Sunshine State was than Texas A&M,
it is.
O-Rock couldn't take it anymore.
I live there.
And before that obnoxious Miami Hurricane could utter the words Sunshine State out of his mouth again,
what?
O-Rock kicked him in the rear and said, well, if you love your Sunshine State so much, then why don't you just go back?
That's assault. Assault, brother.
People go to the Midnight Yell to make fun of these guys, right?
No, so
there's no way this is actually real.
Two people got mad at me on Saturday because I posted on my socials that video where I was reading off some of their chants. The horse laugh, real. That was all I needed to be here to confirm that this is the weirdest thing ever. And they're like, listen, you just don't get it. Like,
we get it.
It's supposed to be corny. And I was like, well, but do you want it to be out in the open as public and bare and naked as being so unfunny in its corniness?
I don't understand.
The whole time, by the way, the Aggie yell leader, when he was making those comments, he kept on twitch.tv/ESPN975. You can see
what
this.
What is happening?
He kept on raising his leg like
why
this.
Was he raising his leg?
I have no idea, but he just kept on, like, after making a dig against Miami, he would go, yeah.
My question is, why is there this inflection when he talks about Miami Hurricane? I don't understand.
If you'd like
to bet on the Aggies or me, I'm going to bet on the Aggies to lose because of the awful Midnight Yell tradition. Go over to BUSR, BUSR.com/ESPN. You can double your deposit within the first 24 hours. You can bet on the Aggies, the Longhorns, the Texans, by the way, the over-under set on 4.5 games. Maybe you saw the Astros clinch the AL West last night and you want to place a futures bet. Maybe you're more of a blackjack guy or a roulette girl. Good news, you can do it all at BUSR.com/ESPN. That's BUSR.com/ESPN.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we got a double dose of Monday Night Football last night as the Titans lost to the Bills. That's putting it lightly. The Bills stomped the Titans. And then, of course, the Eagles beat the Vikings. Paul, you brought this up. You know, there's a lot of conversation about quarterbacks, how you know your quarterback is the guy. I said before the season started, I don't need the Texans to have a winning season for it to be a quote-unquote success. I simply need two things. I need to see them win 6 or 7 games, improve on that number 4 we've seen 2 years in a row. And the second thing is just by the end of the year to know whether Davis Mills is the guy or not. Even if the answer is no and you go after Stroud or Young or whatever, but you have to have a definitive answer. You can't be on the fence. That's my two things for success. What have you seen when you've watched these quarterbacks throughout? I mean, we're heading into week 3 as far as what you like and the skills you want in a quarterback.
I watched some of the throws that Mills made on Sunday again with the NFL app to just make sure that what I saw on Sunday was what I thought I saw. And if there was anything that I maybe missed. And once again, there are just too many moments where with Mills, he's inaccurate. And if you're going to be a quarterback the way that Mills has to be a quarterback, where you're standing in the pocket and you're delivering, you can't be a guy who gets rattled and you can't be a guy who ever misses. You got to hit guys on the money whenever you can so that maybe best case scenario with that skill set, you can be like a Kirk Cousins.
Did you rewatch that play with Brandon Cooks and view it differently through a different lens?
The throw into the end zone?
Yeah.
No, that was a drop.
You still think that was on Cooks?
Cooks screwed that up.
I was on a little bit higher on Mills than you were, but I mean, what we've seen so far has backed up what you thought, that he is not the guy. And look, he's here during a rebuild, so fine. But like I said, they need to figure it out regardless. Lovie Smith did meet with the media yesterday.
Yep, I was out there.
And oh, yeah. You were. I didn't realize that.
Boots
on the ground, Paul. Lovie talked about the fact that he thinks that they may be closer than some people think, but they have some things to work on.
It's just a few plays here and there. And
You know, we had the ball first and goal on the four, correct? I mean, one of the areas just we got to be able to get score a touchdown in that situation. Davis is our quarterback. But you go throughout. I mean, there must seem like every drive there's something that we look at right now that we say that eventually when we get it right, we can get over the hump with that play. I understand it starts with the quarterback, but there's so much more.
He was very defensive of Mills during the press conference. There were a lot of questions that were being asked, and none of them were specifically targeting Mills. They were asking, hey, what do you need to see out of the passing game for it to be successful? Yeah, and also, what the hell is Lovie supposed to say? I didn't ask a question about Mills while I was there because there were enough that had been asked. But also, he clearly wants Mills to just make plays. And if Mills isn't making plays, like what more can you really say? All you can do is make sure that the guy still has some confidence in himself going into the next week. I really do hope Mills proves me wrong. But yesterday when watching the game on Monday night with Josh Allen in a third and long, you feel like he's going to convert every single one.
There's really no question.
It's a massive difference, and I just got jealous. I mean, I remember back when the Texans were looking for a quarterback, I would talk about all the quarterbacks I have hungry eyes for, just so I could play that song.
Hungry eyes.
Yeah, I love that song. But I've been consistently, over my time here, jealous. And most quarterbacks here have had a lot of excuses made for them. And I'm a quarterback snob. I feel like I'm pretty damn good when it comes to determining whether or not a guy is actually special early on in their career.
So who have you evaluated early on that has ended up working that maybe some people didn't see something in?
I would say more so I know when the guy's not good.
Got it.
The only exception would be, to this point, Josh Allen. And Allen is an exception because he stunk the first couple of years in the league with some things, but
Wyoming.
Fast player, big player, cannon for an arm. Like, there was something to work with there that you don't have in a lot of other quarterbacks. But with Marcus Mariota, with Mitchell Trubisky, sometimes you know the guy just isn't comfortable throwing the football down the field. And if you find yourself consistently in third and long situations and you're like, should we quick kick? Should we run a draw play? Should we just get a couple of yards here to make it for an easier special team situation? That's where you are with Mills, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. And what bothered me yesterday, Vanessa, when I tweeted that, people were saying, well, that's an unfair comparison to make between Allen and Mills. Allen's in a better situation. And there's no denying that. He has a better wide receiver than Brandon Cooks and Stephon Diggs. He has a lot of things in his favor. But are we just going to make a million excuses for Davis Mills and what we saw on Sunday, as opposed to just acknowledging that he's not that good?
Right.
And I was here back in 2016 when everyone was making excuse after excuse after excuse for Brock Osweiler, a guy who I also didn't really feel that good about when they brought him in because he was a guy that got benched for dead Peyton Manning in the playoffs when the Broncos went on that Super Bowl run. Manning had been benched for Osweiler, and Osweiler got benched for this version of Peyton Manning, who was clearly not the same guy. But over that season in 2016, we were continuously talking ourselves into the idea that Osweiler just needs time with the system. He didn't get to meet with Bill O'Brien in the offseason.
And you were out on him.
Yes, I was out.
Is this why you and Bill got into it every now and then? Do you think that kind of fed?
I think Bill was out on him, too.
Oh!
I think Bill was out on him pretty early, too.
Could be.
If you go back in time and take a look at what took place over the course of that year, there were lots of awkward kind of confrontations between the two of them, especially at the very end when they decided to just bench Osweiler for Tom Savage, which was met with a standing ovation. I remember, I think it was a game that Osweiler with the Texans played against the Vikings in Minnesota, and it was just awful. Like, it was a painful, painful watch. And I think that was where I was like, I'm officially out. I'm not making excuses anymore for this guy. And you can say to yourself, oh, well, with time, the offensive line in front of Mills gets better. Oh, with time, Pep Hamilton gets better as a play caller. But why not just look at the guy in a league full of professionals and say, he either has it or he doesn't. And to this point, Mills does not look like he's special. Does that mean he's a bad player that doesn't belong in the league? No. Very few quarterbacks are special. But you want to have a guy who's special, and you should be looking for a guy who's special. And I feel pretty confident in that Mills is probably not the guy.
Maybe here for the next year for the rebuild, but they should move on after. One of the issues Mills has had is that he does overthrow the ball. Here's Lovey on that issue.
Whenever you see something like that going on, I think most times it's a combination of both. Receiver can run a better route. Maybe protection could be a little bit better. And then our throw could be a little bit better. It's normally, without going over East Pacific one, it fell a little short or didn't happen the way we like. Most of the time it's that combination of all.
Again, defensive there. And that was the theme. No one was really pressing Lovey on Davis Mills. I imagine those questions will perhaps get a little bit more spicy as the weeks go along. The problem that the Texans have, unlike the Brock Osweiler situation, where at the very least, Tom Savage, you don't know what his potential is, but you had a pretty good idea of what his potential was, which was not a whole lot of anything, given how many times he had transferred in college. In this spot, you don't have anyone really to turn to. Like, Kyle Allen, not a good player. Jeff Driskel is a gadget player that most recently was playing tight end before the Texans decided, hey, let's try to find a way to work him into an unconventional package that throws defenses off. And I think that's kind of the biggest bummer of this year. You have no choice but to stick with Mills for as long as you possibly can. I'm already thinking to myself, though, about getting back on the apps, if you will.
Any parallels between him and Mitchell Trubisky?
I think a lot. I think there's a lot there. I think, right now what you are seeing with Trubisky is questions. There are people chanting Kenny Pickett's name over that game. And Mike Tomlin is trying his best, much like with Lovie Smith, to say all of the right things and to continue to go with, hey, this is our quarterback, as the public sentiment. But they actually have an alternative. And I feel for Trubisky in that. Like, he is once again Kenny under Pickett. Fire, and the fans clearly are out on him, and they should be. He, like Davis Mills to this point, is unwilling to throw the football down the field. Unlike with Mills, you can make this excuse for Mills at the very least. It's not like Mills is working with Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, and a bunch of other good receivers that Pittsburgh has. Mills has just cooks, but still, pretty early with these guys, you don't need to make excuses for them.
And we knew pretty early on Tom Brady was special. So coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk about Paul's Lord and Savior and a little moment of frustration he had, plus our garbage time segment. That is coming up on Vanessa and Gallant.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
And we continue on this Tuesday with a story about Paul's Lord and Savior, one Tom Brady, who is currently, of course, in Tampa Bay after a frustrating week one, had a better week two, but he did not have a good week with a tablet. He slammed a tablet in frustration. You could see it. They showed it on the broadcast. Here's Tom Brady on the explanation of why the anger.
I know I've had a pretty bad record against that tablet, unfortunately. I think I forgot the password and I couldn't log in. So those things can be frustrating as we realize with time. So unfortunately, the tablet just happens to get in the way. And obviously, that's the reason why things weren't going great yesterday. So I had to take it out on the poor, meaningless tablet.
They have passwords for those on the sideline?
I don't believe it. No way.
I don't believe the second part where he blamed that as to why the Buccaneers offense struggled.
They can't have a password?
But maybe they do.
Really?
Also, wouldn't it just be like 12-12 or something for Tom Brady?
Like his mom's birthday at the most.
Yeah, it's not like, he's looking around for the IT guy. Like, what's the password on this? Do I capitalize anything?
That would be pretty funny if that's what was going on.
I think he was upset at Russell Gage or Rashad Perriman, and he threw his tablet, like he always does.
Correct, which would be more realistic for him. Is your Lord and Savior a liar?
No, he would never lie.
Never.
He never lied in his life at all.
Yeah, well, great, he lied to Bridget Moynihan.
What's his name? Jim Gray in this?
Yeah.
I reject those accusations. Laugh. Great media laugh? Yes. Yes. Yeah, definitely.
He really sold the joke. You forgot the password.
I love you, Tom. And Tom calls Jim Gray Scratchy.
He calls him Scratchy?
In those interviews, and now it's a podcast, but you used to hear it right before the Monday Night Football broadcast on the radio, and Brady would call Jim Gray Scratchy. I have no idea why.
How do they know each other?
A good question. They've been doing that interview show for at least a decade, if not longer. I think
insufferable to listen to now, though, because it's like, and that question was brought to you by beef jerky. And that question was brought to you by insurance.
They are very heavy on the sponsors. Let's just say it's not the best flow when it comes to it. And it essentially is Tom Brady's propaganda.
And what have
machine.
I said about that? Any documentary produced by the person being profiled, I don't want to see it. I want to see the gritty, the nitty, the all those things. Any podcast is the same way.
But look, my Lord and Savior needs his own propaganda pulpit. God. Well, yeah. He does.
I don't know that it was the iPad's fault.
He has the propaganda pulpit right
he
here.
Does. Ah, nice. He does.
That's good rhyming.
Kyrie Irving is speaking out, ladies and gentlemen. I know you've all been wondering what's on his mind. Today, there was Mayor Eric Adams is getting boosted in New York City. He's ending the private employer vaccine mandate. He's keeping it for city workers, to which Kyrie became outraged. He tweeted, quote, "If I can work and be unvaccinated, then all my brothers and sisters who are also unvaccinated should be able to do the same without being discriminated against, vilified, or fired. This enforced vaccine pandemic is one of the biggest violations of human rights, capital letters, in history."
He should have had the same energy earlier with saying it in that way, because now it's easy for everyone to say it.
Right.
I mean, the president just said the pandemic is over yesterday. So
did he really?
Yeah,
he
did.
That.
Yeah, so
are we at that point where we're forgetting that, like, the thing that shut us down? I'm like, oh, yeah, there was a pandemic. It was traumatic.
You guys were living here. I was living not here.
You were in... Where were you, Paul? How was that?
I was in Seattle. It was different, to say the least. And they are still acting like it is still very dangerous.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
They're starting to ease up on some things that Texas had eased up on in, like, July of 2020. So, although in July of 2020, I forgot, it did, like, I came back here to visit to escape all of the restrictions, because I just missed, I don't know, going to the bar / restaurants / anywhere out in public.
Really?
And
you missed that, Paul?
I did miss that, Sean. I came back here, and it closed as soon as I landed the next day. There was, like, an ordinance saying, like, all bars and restaurants closed. And I'm like, are you serious, Texas?
There was, like, a two-week, like, grand opening, grand closing.
Yeah.
It was right around... Was it
4th of July?
Yeah, 4th of July or right afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah, there was like come on, let's go out and have some barbecues. And then afterwards, there's obviously a surge. And they're like,
wait a second.
Too fast.
Our bad.
I traveled with the Texans that COVID year. And we were the only news station that traveled. So we were the pool shooter for every station. And I can remember going to different cities. And the contrasts were stunning. Keep in mind, I'm from Indiana. So it's not like I went back at home and had like a ton of restrictions either. Interesting. I did not know Seattle was still under that. That would not make one Kyrith Irvin happy.
Kyrith, is that... Wait, is his real name Kyrith?
No.
Oh, I kind of want it to be Kyrith now.
Well, let's call him Kyrith.
Kyrith Irvin the Thurf. He is... I want to believe some of the stuff he says, and I feel like with a lot of people, if you say one thing, it shouldn't make everything that you say...
I agree.
...go in the trash. There have been a lot of things that Irving has said, though, where it feels like he's being different because he likes to be different.
Do you think he and Aaron Rodgers hang out? Because that Aaron Rodgers, to me, is very much a contrarian. And listen, this isn't about vaccines, by the way. I couldn't care less. But Aaron Rodgers is a contrarian as well.
I don't think Rodgers could deal with Kyrie.
Why?
I think it's a situation where each room is big enough for just one of them.
Oh.
Where if you put both of them in
there. There ain't room for both of us in this town.
If you put both of them in there, it's like.
Uh-uh.
I think Rodgers would listen to other people. I do not think Kyrie would.
Really? I think it might be the opposite. I think Kyrie would want to be friends with him and be like, bro, like, let's go on Joe Rogan's podcast, blah, blah, blah.
I think they would just both talk for 15-minute segments at a time. And then the next person would be, that's interesting. And they just say another thing.
Are they like the
minutes.
Hot girl that has to be the hottest in the room, and then when they get to the Miss America pageant, they realize there's...
I could see that.
How many states do we have? 49 other women just as hot as them?
I really hope you're going to mess that up so bad.
50, right?
50 total.
Whoa.
So is it
don't forget
50...
about Puerto Rico.
Do they get to compete?
They yes. should.
Yes, that's I think they up. Do.
They that's should get to compete.
And then Washington, D.C., does that count as one?
I don't know.
It's not
a state, but I don't know. I don't know. I haven't watched any of these Miss America pets.
It's been a while since I have.
I saw a D.C. license plate, I want to say, in the past week. And I think, like, the license plate has a slogan that's bitching about taxation without representation.
Interesting.
Because they're the capital, but they technically don't have any representation, even though they're not part of Virginia or Maryland.
They have to pay taxes, but they also don't have a congressman.
Yeah.
It's like the Packers ownership. They all just contribute, baby.
Well, they have a whole city of congressmen.
They
you know?
Do.
Yeah, 50 of them right there. What more do you want?
They just don't represent them in any way, shape, or form.
Guys, if you want to learn more about the government, head to our podcast page.
Puerto Rico should be allowed to participate in the Miss USA competition.
Yeah, that's because you think Puerto Rican women are hot.
They're beautiful.
Yeah,
yes.
There you go.
It sucks. I feel bad for Puerto Rico right now because they're getting hit by a hurricane. And obviously, once again, they're going to get forgotten.
You know what? Shout out to Puerto Rico because every single major network aired the Queen's funeral, which they spent $7.5 million on. And they weren't giving a whole lot of love to Puerto Rico.
We should get rid of Ohio and replace Ohio with Puerto Rico.
Easy fix. Combine the Dakotas.
That's a great
point. Now you're still at 50. Don't have to change the flag. Just Dakotas.
It's probably just trees. Yeah, I think you're right.
What are we doing? It's plains.
Guys, we should be in Congress.
And Mount Rushmore.
What's the process for being in Congress? Can we apply?
Yeah, I guess.
We are younger than everyone in Congress.
We could theoretically apply.
We are all younger than every single person in Congress except for
one
person.
There's a 20-year-old in Congress?
There's a 30. Well, shoot. You guys are younger than everybody in Congress.
That's what I was thinking.
I am older than one person in Congress. I think I might be older than AOC.
She's everyone's
favorite.
This
has been politics talk.
There you go. All right.
Politics.
Politics. Whoa. Positive politics. Here is a garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
So I obviously love true crime, and there's a podcast called Serial that has touched on what these people that host the podcast believe was a wrongful conviction of somebody in Baltimore, Maryland. That person was released yesterday. Adnan, I believe it's Syed?
Yes.
Released yesterday, and in large part due to the podcast.
I figure you, as the biggest proponent of murder being mean.
It is mean.
Would have been in on this podcast very early.
Yep.
So were you in before it was cool to listen to it?
I was in before it was cool. Yeah, okay. Thank you for recognizing that.
There's a TV show now, Only Murders in the Building, that is, I think, based off of that entire crime podcast
genre. This was an OG true crime podcast. This was before Crime Junkie. This was before lot of the ones.
It was the first big podcast.
It was.
I mean, it was huge. That was very
Rogan.
Different. Well, hang on.
Come on. Don't disrespect Rogan right there.
Have we got Sean Rogers behind the glass here? ayahuasca takes, Joe? What do you think?
It's
Have
good
you ever
to
tried
see,
DMT?
It's very interesting.
Did you guys see the ayahuasca celebration?
By the Packers?
The Packers
that was
awesome.
That was great.
That was an amazing troll moment. Adam Levine, all right, I didn't write this one down, so whichever one of you guys did, you're going to have to explain this. Adam Levine had an affair, and the other woman is playing victim. He's married to a Victoria's Secret model.
Well, he got into entanglement with a Instagram, as some would call, THOT. And I guess Adam Levine asked her if it would be okay if he named his next child with that Victoria's Secret model wife you're talking about after the gal with which he was having
an
affair.
No way that happened.
That's what she apparently brought up.
Did she do like a sit-down interview?
No, she did a TikTok. Yeah, I know. Sean's laughing his ass off.
Is she hot?
Just the
very
hot.
Not that it matters.
The question: did she do a sit-down interview? No, she did a TikTok. Is a very hilarious.
Right, but who cares what she has to say? No one. She really tried to make herself out to be a victim here. Hey, honey, you know Adam Levine's married, so...
Right, everybody knows Adam Levine's married.
I mean, he might be telling you some things otherwise, but when you guys are getting to your... I mean, you're a part of this. You're not as bad as Adam Levine in it, but no one is going to feel sorry
for
you.
She's not married, but she should also realize she's not a victim. She wasn't harassed. Yeah, Adam Levine isn't... not my thing.
Maroon 5 sucks.
Their first album was good.
They suck.
Songs About Jane was great. Sunday Morning was a great song, and she will be loved. But then they turned super poppy.
No, that one's awful.
No, Songs About Jane was fantastic.
No, I blew garbage. Every single bit that they do.
I don't even know what this is. Wake up call, caught you in the morning with another one in my bed. That was a good one.
You know, the reason that I dislike Pantera is because of that one person who tried to fight me at Down the Street Bar. I will 100% blindly listen to anything by Pantera over Adam Levine and Maroon 5.
Even their
garbage.
Early stuff.
All of their stuff
Do you
is terrible.
Think Maroon 5 sucks, Sean?
I have no opinion on Maroon 5. I've probably only heard their songs like while I was walking around.
What kind of music are you
listening to? Mostly rap and then some metal.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right,
so Pantera.
Guys, that's been Music and Politics, aka Vanessa and Galant's new show format. Have a good day, everybody. Up next, you got the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham from 12 to 3.
Peace.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.